Coming up on today's episode, Lyft picks a car for its robo-taxi fleet, Boston Dynamics has a new robot that's going to turk your gerb, and the Starship SN11 lands everywhere. Let's get ludicrous. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff happening today that's going to make tomorrow totally ludicrous. I'm Joe Scott with the Answers to Joe YouTube channel. Welcome back, Tim Dodd.
I think I'm here. I don't know where I am. It's me, Tim Dodd, still in Texas, obviously.
I'm so sorry.
And with us is Ben Solens.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Solens from the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. And Tim, your Texas is looking much better on you now. I mean, geez, man, you got the studio dialed, it looks like.
Studio's all, I know I've been, I no, I haven't been saying this, because every time I'm like, no, I have so much more work to do. We're almost like, I had last week when you guys were recording, I had two of my friends come out that were helping like build the studio. And it was like, you know, when you think of like a startup community and guys like, working till 4 a.m., getting like a 2-hour nap and then continue working and just like cutting. I was cutting wires like all night because, yeah. Long story short. So we got like this new switcher, like, you know, video switcher, because we were like, we never want to have to worry about inputs again. Right. Because it's a big limitation. A lot of things you have to do, you have to loop through, like go out and output back into a loop, you know, or something if you want to do like graphics and stuff. Like, it start eating through channels really quickly. So 40 is, like, room for expansion. I know it sounds ridiculous. It doesn't mean we're going to have 40 cameras. It just means, like, 40 actually is about what it takes to make sure you're not going to run out in 2 months, you know?
Yeah.
And so I guess I didn't realize the grasp of what that actually meant. Because 40 inputs on a rack unit,
yeah,
is, like, you physically can't get the cables in there.
Mm. No.
So you have to route that to a patch bay, or in our case, we go to a patch bay and then an IO panel. So every single channel needed two more SDI cables, and then you still have to build an SDI cable to run it through the house or the, you know, whatever your studio space is or whatever, you know? So I spent literally like days in a row just making SDI cables. Well, technically they're coaxial cables with BNC connectors. I got someone pedanting me saying they're not SDI cables. And then they're not Ethernet cables, you know, it's like,
yeah,
I'm now really good at making SDI cables, and everything is at least physically working. We still have a lot of cleanup and like a lot of just organizing and tweaking to do to really get it to the point where it's honed in and we can literally just be like, boom, ready to go no matter what. But it's a lot closer. So I nice. Feel good. I feel pretty good about it. I feel like I'm at least at a stopping point where I don't feel like we have to stay up all night long working.
I feel like you've went from a highly sought after a position of influencer to key grip. Just like plugging in things.
Studio engineer.
Studio
yes.
engineer.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tim, do you have ahead. A tangent cam?
Oh.
Almost. Almost. I mean, we do have a studio cam now, but it's not like as cool as the tangent cam.
Okay.
Depends how he's feeling that day, as several that is lined up ready to go. Yeah. Well, let's not forget that also with us today, guys, we have our Discord family. How you guys doing? Chuck, Super Mosh, Sean, Andy, Trevor.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, yo. Sorry.
Yeah, people are making fun of me because my goal is to have this be a 30-minute setup, and it's still our last one was 2.5 hours to go live. I think my 30-minute setup is like SpaceX saying they want to fly a rocket 24 hours later. Like, I think it's...
Yeah. Yeah. Like it just lands sure. and fill it back up and send it off. Yeah. And if you guys... So thank you, Discord, for joining us yet again and helping us actually along the way here. You'll hear us interacting with them throughout the show, as well as kind of asking questions that are like our fact checkers in some way. So if you want to join the party, listen, watch live, be a part of it like everyone there is, you can learn more, sign up at olfpod.com/Patreon. And of course, we do really appreciate the support, everyone, because it does take quite a bit to make this machine run. So with that, guys, we got quite a bit of stories today. And actually, if you guys are listening and watching on YouTube, you can skip to whatever story you're interested in, which probably has something to do with a piece of metal flying around and landing on the ground. But here we are. And we can start wherever you, dealer's choice today, Tim, since you were out last week. Where do you want to start?
I mean, we have
Is
to
Tim
start
our
with
dealer?
Us. I am your story dealer.
take me to your dealer.
I have to admit, guys, that I think we can't not talk about SN11, right? I mean,
I'm dying to.
Let's do it.
It's, well, let's start here. where to begin? So obviously SN11 has been fairly elusive, and we've, you know, been waiting quite a while to actually be able to see the launch. And unfortunately, on Tuesday, that's exactly what we didn't see. The launch. Of course, Starship SN11 did launch on Tuesday. To the shock and awe of many, Elon said on Monday that they're aiming for an 8 a.m. liftoff time of Starship. And we're all like, yeah, sure you are. You know, road closes at 7. You're going to fuel it up and ready to go at 8. Yeah, definitely. But, you know, just to be safe, we went on basically as soon as we had our remote cameras up about 6 a.m. So 2 hours early to make sure we could see, you know, if the road is closing and all that stuff. And we didn't have, here's the beginning of our stream, actually. This was our view. And this camera is 150 meters away, 500 feet from the rocket. You cannot see the rocket. That's it. Like, that's bad. That's really bad. So that's how foggy it was. And we're sitting here waiting and waiting and waiting. These were our views. You just could not see anything. So we thought there's no way they're flying. And next thing you know, we're actually hearing venting and we're getting ready. And then we see a beautiful, beautiful orange glow happen.
And that palm tree took off.
But this is what we had right here. That's what we saw. Wow.
Yeah,
such
anybody
wow.
who did not see Tim's live stream of this, like if you ever want to see a man in ultimate distress.
Yeah.
Like you were just like, what? I can't see anything.
We could. It was so disappointing because like obviously this is what we like live and die for is to mm-hmm. see these things fly and we're all freaking out. Of course, we had kind of our tracking cameras. We didn't even pull out the telescope because it was so foggy. We weren't going to even bother setting it up until the fog cleared.
Yeah.
But they just went for it anyway. They went full send. And boy, did they full send this one.
but even their feet kept cutting out, too.
Yes. Their feed kept cutting out.
So everything about this was FUBAR.
It was super FUBAR. I mean, the whole thing was just garbage, honestly, for everybody, including all the people that now have to pick up a bunch of garbage everywhere. So basically, okay, so for those of you that aren't listening, SN8, 9, 10 all flew on beautiful clear days. You know, they're all doing the same high altitude, you know, flight test and the belly flop, the tail down landing maneuver. SpaceX is just trying to stick that landing, prove that it's a viable system for recovery. And yeah, this flight was, we could hear it. We know it happened. SpaceX, of course, had a feed. But it, like Joe said, the feed was cutting out from SpaceX too. And I think a lot of that has to do with there was so much moisture in the air. It was literally, you're in a cloud that even their tracking dishes can get, you know, water in it and actually interfere with video signals and stuff like that too. So I'm guessing that's a lot of reason they were losing video. But yeah, my view is on the right here in this shot and space. So we pulled up SpaceX stream on the left. Yeah, we actually even had then this is our landing camera on the we switched it landing camera on the left, SpaceX stream on the right there. We just had nothing. We had nothing. But it was going up, you know, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, we are coming up here on it's falling. It did the belly flop maneuver. Everything was looking pretty good. And of course, one of the things that we look for while it's falling, you'll start to see some really heavy condensation streaks come off the fins there like that. That's when they're chilling down the Raptor engines to relight them. You have to run the propellant through the engine bells, through the turbo pumps, to chill them down before you know, flow a whole bunch of cryogenic fluid through there. So that's the chill down. So we know we're within about, you know, 15 seconds or 25 seconds from that point. And then all of a sudden my screen goes bright orange. And then all of a sudden you start seeing, watch my screen on the left very carefully. So you see that stuff falling, more stuff falling than a big giant chunk of something and more stuff falling. And then our camera just froze. And then this is my face of, oh dear God. First off, did they lose the rocket? Obviously, they lost the rocket. And then it's going through my head. We risked it. We put everything out there this time. We put every one of our cameras out there besides the ones in the studio. So 5 Z cams. These are 4K, 120 frames a second cameras. You know, they're not cheap with like pretty nice lenses on them. We put these expensive encoders out there that are, you know, $2,000 each. These big radio dishes and big expensive batteries. And we're seeing chunks that are, you know, hundreds of like probably, you know, some chunks that are probably like 1,000 kilograms, you know, or like a ton falling right in front of our camera. And we're just like, and then we lost the feed. We're like, oh my God.
Oh God.
Clearly this, we had something just fall right on our camera, you know, right on our whole system. So the rest of my feed was sitting there going, like slowly accepting the fate that we likely just lost everything. We had risked everything and we had likely lost everything for nothing. We didn't even have footage, you know. That was the worst thing, is like, it would be one thing if you lose it and you get this beautiful shot and you get the cool, you know, explosion and stuff, and you have these cameras that live to tell or didn't live to tell about it and all this stuff. It's another thing to lose everything for some gray. Oh. So I was just sitting there like, and by the way, this was day five, because ever since Thursday, this is basically a week of like no more than 3 or 4 hours of sleep for a week. So yes, insert your dad thing here, Ben. Like, that's me every week. We know.
Try that for 6 years, buddy.
But yeah, that was, so I was just, oh man, I was just beyond tired and disappointed. And
well, on top of that, you're doing a live stream and you just have like, I really felt for you as somebody who is on camera a lot, that like you're just sitting there and this whole thing happened, and yeah, you're probably processing that you lost all this equipment as well. But at the same time, it's like, I have to say something here, and there's just nothing to say.
This is the most speechless I think I've ever been, because we can't tell anything. Like, there isn't any information to go off of other than some chunks of big hunks of metal fell out of the sky. And this is the last frame that we got from one of our cameras too. It's just a giant hunk of metal flying at the camera.
Oh my God.
You know, so we're just like, oh dear. So we knew they lost it. We knew for a fact that those chunks don't come from nothing. it went bye-bye. And we're processing on air just like what exactly happened. And we waited at that point, and luckily pretty quick. Well, let me show you we kind of had the official SpaceX stream in there too, but again, their stream had almost nothing. You know, their stream, once it had engine relight here, here we go. They go for lighting the engines, and that's the last frame that they see right there.
Mm.
So don't forget, there's always a little bit of a delay. This is right at engine relight. So this is right when they lit the engines. They kind of stagger them a little bit, almost a full second between each one, probably about 0.7 or 0.8 seconds between engine ignition that's what we saw for SN10. Boom, 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 you know, like it goes boom, 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 which is really cool to see. From some audio, people are hearing, including we were listening to our audio last night. We have a pretty decent clean recording. You can pretty distinctly hear boom, boom, and then like...
yes.
So of course, you know, some people are speculating, was this a full-blown just engine failure? Was this flight termination system? I'm going to go against flight termination system, because I'm pretty sure that would have been the first thing Elon said, is we triggered the flight termination system, because it was off nominal. You know, it was not, things were not okay. He would have said that right away. So it was not flight termination. So we can you know, definitively say that at this point, that it was not flight termination system, and that the failure happened basically right at engine relight. So we got back, you know, Elon got back online almost immediately. So a high production rate solves many ills is what he first said, as in obviously they're building these start. Basically, like once they're cranking out so many of these things, they're going to find all these failures and they'll be worked out just by making so many. Like, you make enough of something, you'll have some crappy ones, but eventually, you know, you'll learn all these lessons.
You'll get good enough at it.
You'll get good enough at it.
Yeah.
Yep. So then he said, at least the crater is in the right place. Kind of. If the crater is, you know, 1 square mile, then yeah. and if giant hunks of metal landing right next to your propellant farm is in the right place, then Yeah. I mean, it, technically, yes. I mean, obviously, it was not... Again, I want to reiterate, this is a very remote place. There is no danger to the public. Some really lightweight pieces of debris that are basically like, you know, lightweight insulation because of pretty strong winds did blow all the way up to South Padre even. Wow. But obviously, you know, that'd be like any piece of trash basically, you know, could make it that far, you know. So obviously any heavier piece that could do any damage all was contained well within the safety zone, like well within. So this is the first bit of that Elon said is he said, looks like engine 2 had issues on ascent and didn't reach operating chamber pressure during landing burn, but in theory it wasn't needed. Something significant happened shortly after landing burn start. Should know what it was once we can examine the bits later today. So yeah, it was engine number 2, but it was the third one to light. That is likely the cause of the problem, or the problem happened right at engine ignition. So,
well, one of the shots on ascent, facing back down toward the ground, it looked very sooty. The exhaust did, but I said that before, so right. maybe methane is just more sooty than I expect. But, when I looked back on that, I was like, I wonder if that was an indicator that there was something wrong.
Well, we saw a few indicators that something. There's always this like fire inside the engine bay that just does not look great.
Yeah,
like almost always. And this is normal. That's the flame out thing they do. But especially like at ignition, there was a substantial amount of fire. You know, it seems like this is again. These are still very much development engines. They are getting a lot more refined.
That's the shot I'm looking at. See how red that is?
Yeah, you're right. That does look extra red. That does look extra red. Yeah, that could just be from running. If you run too fuel rich, I'm guessing that it'd be.
Well, when he said that it didn't have the combustion pressure,
it didn't reach operating pressures.
Operating pressure, maybe that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And as Discord is pointing out, it also could be, you know, a little bit extra because it was right at dawn. So like the, you know,
that's true.
This is 20 minutes after sunrise. The sky is likely quite orange. We didn't know that under the cloud of a fog, you know, but it could also be a decent amount of artifacting of just simply a bright orange sunrise, basically. So Elon, you know, is giving us a few little things saying, you know, like after. So Adam Klotz on Twitter asked, you know, after cleanup, will SN15 rollout or perhaps BN1? And we got some updates. SN15 rolls out to launch pad in a few days, which I really hope not because I'm trying to go home for at least a little bit of time once the car is done, which will be next week now, it sounds like, after almost 3 months.
Oh, God, you're still waiting on that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize.
Yep. And but I'm hoping that that's just Elon time because the nose cone hasn't been integrated. It doesn't have they're putting the flaps on it now, but I'm really hoping it doesn't roll out for at least like a week and a half or two. And then it takes, you know, a good 3 weeks to launch again, you know? So I want to be home for like the rest of April. That'd be awesome.
For once you want them to take longer.
Yes,
to launch.
Please. but he said, SN15 rolls out the launchpad in a few days. It has hundreds of design improvements across structures, avionics, software, and engine. Hopefully, one of those improvements covers this problem. If not, then retrofit will add a few more days. And then he went on to say, next major technology, REV, is at SN20. Those ships will be on or be orbit capable with heat shield and stage separation system. Ascent success probably is high. However, SN20 plus vehicles will probably need many flight attempts to survive Mach 25 entry heating and land intact. So they're basically saying, like, we're going to, you know, SN20 is likely to, you know, fly, and he has pretty high confidence that that's a pretty mature design for the actual rocket. But you know, re-entry is going to be the scary, dicey thing. Mm. But real quick, back to the... Well, let me show you this first. So yesterday at about 5 o'clock local... We got a chance to get out to the pad and drive down the road. They would not let us park along the side of the road at all because there's still so much debris. They had literally just cleaned off the road enough so that the beachgoers could have access to the public beach again. But there was just debris just everywhere here. I know it's hard to tell here the size of the stuff. It just looks like, you know, some pieces. But when you remember that, oh, this piece is as big as a truck. You know, mm-hmm. like, and a hunk of 4 millimeter thick stainless steel. That's crazy. You know, these are big, big, big pieces strewn everywhere.
Is that marshland right there? Like, what are we looking at?
Yeah, so that's this will get sometimes this is actually completely underwater.
Yeah.
Because it's with a tide.
Yeah.
So this is part like the very, very southern tip of a cutout from the South Bay. And you almost can never like it's never deep enough to boat there, but you can pull up in a boat about another half mile north of this to the right. And you know, so that's yeah, so it is like it's very marshy because it is often underwater. Mm. So this was a hole in the road that was straight. This is a lot deeper. They're obviously filling it in this photo. But it was deep wow. because that's where one of the engines landed.
Oh, jeez.
One of the engines.
One of the Raptors Dang. Landed right there and embedded itself in the road.
Oh, God.
Yep.
How do you even get that out of there? Well, yeah, I guess a backhoe or something.
Yeah, some big, heavy tools.
Dang.
Yeah, and just these pieces everywhere. You know, it's just really hard. Like, the pictures don't do it justice, but when you're just driving out there and you just see this landscape with just pieces of a giant rocket, it was very surreal.
Wow.
Very, mm-hmm. very surreal. So yeah, that was great. And then but here's some imagery. Of course, the aerial king here of aerial imagery is RGV aerial photography, who gets in a Cessna and flies right at like the limit where they can fly, and then just gets really good images. They had a lot of shots of the wreckage, and you can see just there's very few things that made it to the launch pad or the landing pad. Lots of debris strewn everywhere. It's honestly pretty nuts. This is a shot here that you can see. When you get closer into the shot, you realize just how much debris. And SpaceX is going out and quite literally cleaning up every piece. Like,
You need a gigapixel camera there that can like zoom in 1000x or something. You
know? Yeah, there's going to be cleanup on this one for a long time, because don't forget, this was not only did it fail higher, you know, it failed at about 500 meters, so around 1500 feet or whatever at the flip. It also had the most fuel on board at this point, because it, you know, normally when you do those landing burns, you're burning through fuel. So all other, you know, serial number or Starship prototypes had gone through at least your 10 or 15 seconds of burning propellant. That's propellant that, you know, obviously doesn't blow up as much then when it does blow up, and then they blew up at ground level, you know? So a lot of the energy is dispersed on the ground. This so blew that, up above the ground. So it's, you know, spewed debris quite literally everywhere.
That X there, the SpaceX logo, that's the landing pad or the launch pad?
That's the landing pad. The launch pad okay. are these two.
Are those little structures. Right?
Yep. These little structures.
Yeah. Those are the suborbitals. I mean,
they're big, but.
Correct.
The image, it looks small.
Yep, Joe, those are the suborbital launch pads.
And
so these are just for these.
To the left,
one
yeah.
is these tall pillars.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yep, and they're
this
working on the tank
shot.
Farm here.
This really gives a sense of what
yeah.
what the layout is. Yeah.
Again, RGV, I'm a supporter of RGV on Patreon, because these flyovers are so valuable to the community to be able to get a sense of scale, size and the progress, you know, as they're building out this launch infrastructure. You can just get a sense of, wow, they are just building and building and building and building and flying and flying and blowing up.
Kind of landing a few of them. I mean,
yeah, they're,
you know,
they're landing. They're landing parts of it. Starhopper came out still in one piece. Luckily, that's always a big concern. But yeah, RGV just had an awesome. Does an awesome job with some of this. This is a part that you can see on one of NASA Spaceflight's cameras. This is part of the engine skirt, so the very bottom mm-hmm. of the engine where it has the landing legs, because you can see one of the landing legs still intact, and one of them
did they
in
deploy?
Pieces. It looks like this one may have deployed. And it landed on that ATV. You
cool.
Can see the
one
roof
problem is... fixed.
Well, actually, there's another landing leg right there above the ATV, so it looks like a landing leg may have landed on the ATV and then. Oof. Bounced off or something.
Oh yeah, it looks like it's kind of crushed on the top.
Yep.
Those things aren't cheap either.
Nope. I don't get why don't they move this stuff.
This that's is... what my whole thing this whole time. I'm like, why don't you just land like a mile away at least,
right?
Like, what
in the tank
is...
farm and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's such a high risk.
Well, I actually I kind of get the tank farm now, because I think it's really one of the hardest things with cryogenic fuels is running it through a pump and the valves. And anytime you stretch it out across a pipe, it has a chance to cool down. So it means you have to make it colder and colder and colder in your storage to be able to get it to the right temperature. Yeah. So the closer your run is between your tank farm and your rocket, the better. With some risk, obviously.
But you're talking about the launch area.
Yeah, like
why
do they have to land right next to it? Yeah. That's what I don't get.
I think, honestly, for this, I think it's just logistics. They don't have the land out here. Like, they don't have room. All the rest of it's all federal wildlife. They just have this small little area of, like, 50 acres or something, and they just got to make use of it.
Just land in Mexico. Like, it's right there. You can just buy some more land down there and then have a boat pull it over. Oh, I guess they're going to land on oil rig
someday.
Oil platforms. So insane.
But lastly, to round out the story for at least on my end, we went out there last night and we were able to finally check out our cameras after, 32 hours of stressing out. And again, hard to picture the scale of this thing, but we built this like giant tripod thing so we mount dishes, Wi-Fi radio dishes, so that we can sling data directly between us and that without any lag time. And we can have a high amount of bandwidth for high quality video. What we found out was our stuff was came out completely unscathed, believe it or not, which was just, we were not expecting that. So very happy about that. We did not lose any equipment. The only thing that happened, I think right down here, Gene from S Pod right here, something hit one of the stakes holding, like we had these guide wires holding that dish pole up, and it took a pretty good hit and bent, and that was enough to twang the whole dish assembly and just knock it out of alignment. So that's all that happened to us. Here we thought, I jumped, especially lack of sleep, Tim, and seeing debris falling everywhere, just assumed that that our whole thing got crushed.
There goes 30 grand.
it was literally about 20 grand worth of equipment. And of course, this stuff isn't insured because who's going to write off that policy? Like, you put this next to an experimental prototype rocket that's the biggest, most explosive, and most failed rocket ever built? Sure.
Sounds like a good investment, yeah.
It back, and it's like, it was like this when I got it. I got it out of the box.
Take it back to Best Buy. Like, I opened this box 2 days ago, and
there was a piece of Starship in it. I don't know.
It's muddy for some reason. Yeah, the only thing, we have a little bit of mud on some cameras from, like, that's how close stuff was, that it was getting hit by mud and dirt from falling debris, but it did not get hit by debris at all, which is,
it's crazy,
honestly insane. We're making a few more tweaks to my goal. Again, I don't have these aspirations on things like this. You guys know this, I don't want to be sitting here just building a studio and working on a studio. That's like not what I want to do with my life or my time. But I'm just trying to make sure that we have a system that's in place. Because once they start flying, like the orbital mission, when they launch the first Super Heavy with 28 Raptors, that will be the biggest rocket to ever, ever, ever fly. I want to make sure we have everything just like completely set in stone, smooth, reliable, and just easy to go, so we can actually cover those missions, because that's going to be history. That's going to be history in the making. I just want to make sure we have it completely set up and ready to go. So I'm investing a lot of like time and energy and money into getting that right now so that we can be ready for those missions. Like, these are our teething pains. So some of the changes we're going to make, we still have some wiring cleanup to do around the studio, but our remote stuff, we're going to ditch the dishes. They're nice. They're a nice way of, again, transmitting a lot of high speed data. We have a nice connection, very low latency, only like 40 milliseconds of latency. But I think we're going to go with a more traditional bonding route. So we bond cell phone signals, and then bring that back to the studio here. But the good thing is we'll take it right to the studio. We don't have to like encode in the cloud. We'll be doing it over SRT, and it will be, should be only about a second. We're adding basically a second of latency for easier setup and hopefully a little bit more reliability, because if, those, as we know now, the dishes, if they get twanged at all for any reason, or if a bird lands on them, we've had that problem before, we can lose signal. So this will help prevent that. So I'm excited for that. And then a few other tweaks, and then I think we'll be,
then you can rest.
It'll be good. And Tion says do both cell phone backup. But the thing is, the dishes take almost half hour to an hour to align every launch. I'm just trying to eliminate that from the people that set the stuff up. So,
so you can just have a cell.
You just put something on the ground and it's just on. You don't have to like point or aim
the
and
Starlink version of this, right? Where it has exactly. all the like just oh in that general direction.
Starlink would actually be great. We'll use Starlink for sure once it's reliable down here as one of the data aggregates for sure.
Yeah.
So
now, so you must not be like me where every time there's something new I'm doing, I'm like, oh, I must buy all new camera equipment and try everything new.
No, that's exactly what we do.
It's like, oh, hey, I'm going to go film this thing. I obviously need a new drone. I don't know. Like,
it's indoors at the at CES, but you know.
Yeah, of course I need that.
I'm the exact opposite. I have a higher resolution on my phone than I do my camera that I shoot my videos on.
And we're all jealous of you.
It's time,
for that,
time
Joe.
To upgrade.
That's Joe, like Doug
if it
De Niro,
ain't broke,
man.
Don't
like,
fix it. Yeah.
Like how Doug does his stuff, I'm just like, I love you for not like feeling like succumbing to the pressure of like, oh, I'm this super successful car YouTuber. I need like a crew with me when I go do this. Like, no, it's literally just him and a tripod and a, you know, 6-year-old camera or something. Like,
but there is a sense of like doing it this way got me here.
Yeah.
And I don't really want to, don't, like you said, if it's not broke, don't fix it. You know, I don't want to mess with it. Things are, right. You know, I think that's kind of where he's probably coming from too.
I have a lot of that problem myself. Like almost like I put all, like, so my philosophy is I feel like, especially I have a really strong Patreon support and I always feel kind of this obligation that I should be reinvesting that to try to do more and better and, you know, higher quality and things like that. Like that's kind of my own like obligation or my own.
Sure.
Like dilemma, sure. I guess, specifically, and super chats to people like, thanks so much, you know. So then I feel like I kind of have to, even though at this point it's almost making my life like a lot harder for now. But I don't know. Maybe there's got to be a healthy balance between.
There's diminishing returns, right? There's at some
definitely.
Point, you know, like even like your cameras out there, if they're like 6K or 8K, that's cool. But like nobody has even a screen they could watch that on, and YouTube's going to compress the hell out of it anyways. So.
Right.
You know, there have to be there. Yeah. There's a limit to some point of what it is. So the value
right.
you get. Yeah.
Well, just real quick to kind of close out the Starship talk at the end of your, or at some point in your stream after it went all splody, you said something about one step forward, two steps back.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of said it off the cuff, and I was like, that's really what this is feeling like, because it's like SN8 really close, it got all upright, yeah, and then SN9 not so close, and then SN10 landed and then blew up, and then this one just blew up in the sky, and so it's it gets closer and then further away and then closer and then further away.
You're right.
It's like, ugh.
You're absolutely right, and hopefully I feel like they've learned so many lessons, and I think this whole program will go so much smoother once the Raptor engines are just running better. You know, once they're more mature, they're cranking them out, they're making tweaks to them constantly. I think once, you know, 15, I think is going to have some pretty substantially, you know, should have substantially better engines that'll be more refined and more reliable. So that right there will, you know, just engine reliability for something like this will drastically improve the reliability of the whole system, but but they do need a lot of work still, I think, with like header tanks and all that, but I'm pretty sure SN15, everyone's noticing that it has a blunt nose. I'm pretty sure it's just because they've made changes to the header tank that is the nose of the rocket, so we'll hopefully see some of those changes that they've had problems with, but apparently no, it doesn't. Trevor, what do you know? Oh, that's the other test nose cone. Well, I would still assume that at this point there's going to be some hardware changes to the header system. But
well,
we haven't seen it. No, Elon didn't say to make it more pointy. He said that the design of Starship is pointier than it needs to be just because it looks cooler. But okay, go ahead, Ben.
Speaking of new engines, Lyft has a new engine that they're going to be using for their robotaxi fleet.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like that?
Is it gas or electric?
Oh, I guess it's a motor. Sorry.
no, I wasn't doing that.
Fine.
Actually.
Yeah, right?
Actually.
Let me make sure Discord can see. Yeah, okay. So, the how do you say it? Someone tell me. Hyundai? This is a fun day in a Hyundai. Is that right?
I got to do a video about this.
Basically. Is it Hyundai or Hyundai? That's the question.
Hyundai, like Sunday. I always remember hearing that, but I don't know if that's
anyways.
True.
The Hyundai Ioniq 5, which is a new electric crossover, I guess you could call this, has been chosen by Lyft for their robo-taxi fleet. So lots of words there that don't make a lot of sense because...
like
because what? Lyft has a robo-taxi fleet? And what? The Ioniq 5 is level 4 self-driving? What? Like, this is just too many things. So there's a statement here from them that hopefully helps explain it. Okay, so this isn't the Ioniq 5 consumer model. So what that means is you aren't going to buy the Ioniq 5 and it is self-driving in the SAE self-driving sense, not the Tesla sense. So it's saying that this is not that same one. Okay, so they have a company called Motional, like emotional, but without the E, so Motional. Motional's Ioniq 5 will be equipped with level 4 autonomous driving capabilities. It's the first robotaxi under the Motional name. I would argue maybe the first robotaxi ever, although I guess there is that one from Yandex, I think. It's a Russian company, and there's like all these videos of it. But anyways, okay, so it's the first one under the Motional name or brand and is the product of a deep collaboration between Hyundai's world-class manufacturing and design teams. Ooh, dust my shoulders off. And Motional's autonomy, robotics, and software teams. The platform is the convergence of the mobility's two most transformative technologies, electrification and autonomies. Electrification and autonomy, and signals the future of transportation. So this is crazy. So, okay, so this is, they're basically taking this car that Hyundai's making, which by all accounts is a really great electric car that checks a lot of boxes for a lot of people in terms of price, performance and range and all those things. I think the design is really cool too. I'm really stoked on this. I hope to get to drive it someday. And they're using actual, they're adding LiDAR to it and radar and a whole suite of cameras. They're adding all the Motional stuff. And apparently that is what Lyft is going to be using in 2023 with their ride hailing app, or that's the goal anyways, that it will be like you open up your Lyft app, you hit a button, and one of these self-driving cars will show up, and there you go. So
powered by what though? Like whose self-driving technology are they using here?
Motional. That's the company. And it's owned by Hyundai. So
really?
Yeah.
So do we know much about that? Like how much
I know,
data
like, did
do
this
they
just
have?
Come out of nowhere?
Yeah, I really don't understand it. I don't understand. Well, like I've just not heard of it at all, but it doesn't mean it's not like, you know, real or whatever. And they do say that once they get these kind of up and running, because the Ioniq 5, I don't believe is in production yet either. So it's kind of like, you're now, like Lyft has said, yes, that's the one. And you're like, dude, we're like 2 years out at least from this being real, like at least a year from this hitting the streets and even the car being made. I don't doubt that Hyundai can make this car and that they can hit the specs and it can be awesome. Like they're already doing that for other models. So I think the car itself is a really great choice and design and everything. I really like the car. But for Lyft to call it and say that's the one, that's cool. I'm curious to see how this is going to work. Like, are they going to remove the steering wheel or disable it somehow? Like, otherwise it shows up, you get in, do you just sit in the passenger seat? Like, because why not? Why couldn't I sit in the driver's seat now? Because there's even more, like I could have five people in here instead of four or whatever, you know? So... yeah, I'm really curious to see this. It's exciting that this is happening, but I've not heard of this company at all until I saw this, so I was just kind of scratching my head a little bit.
How funny would it be if all this time we've been like Tesla versus Waymo versus Apple, and all of a sudden this Motional thing comes out of nowhere, and they're like, no, we got it.
It's just perfect.
and they're just driving around perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, Tim, search Yandex self-driving car like Moscow or something, because this, if you remember, Marquez did one, was it 2 years ago at CES, and it like drove him around CES and without a driver, like straight up, not a person in there, driving down Las Vegas city streets. And is this the Yandex one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they reportedly like fully have it operational in Russia, which I thought was crazy. Like there's videos of it doing its thing. Yeah. So I'm really curious. Yeah, you know, it kind of reminds me, who was it? Was it Malcolm Gladwell? I think Malcolm Gladwell had a thing about this where it was like not the first company that to do a thing that was ever the one that really was the most successful at it. Mm-hmm. So like and you know, I think he talked about Friendster being the first social network and then MySpace coming along and then Facebook destroying everybody, you know, and Facebook is the only one that made it. And then like, you know, Hewlett Packard made computers and then this and then this and then or like cell phones, you know, and then Apple made the iPhone and just dominated, you know, and that kind of a thing. So it was like not the first company to do. There's this like pattern of like the third or fourth company to really do something that is the one that nails it. So I don't know. I don't really see that yet, because the way I understand self-driving tech to work is you need just mountains of data. You need cars driving on the road, learning about each condition. So putting it through a test track, like they said, for months is cool, but I don't know that that's nearly enough to have it be level four out there on the road.
Right.
And then, there's also like the geofenced things. Like, I had to pull it up, but there was up in Frisco, Texas, over here, they did a pilot program for Drive.ai. Mm-hmm. And it was just like on certain roads in a certain area, it would come and pick you up and take you to certain places. You know, it was really more like a bus than a, you know, a driverless car. But it was a car that drove on the roads without a driver, you know. I don't know. Maybe this is one of those things, and maybe that's kind of where things start. And we start
seeing
more of
that. I think
that's
actually a great place to start. Like how Waymo is doing it, how they're geofenced. I think that's a great place to start, you know. Because, I've driven Chevy Super Cruise, right, which has a geofence thing. It works well. It's not as good as Autopilot, I wouldn't say. And I've driven Autopilot for years, just got back on a road trip. Definitely had a few scary moments. It had a hell of a time with whenever there was an on-ramp, like if I'm in the right lane and there's an on-ramp and all of a sudden the lane gets really wide. Yeah. Hell of a time with that still. So,
I don't get that one. Like,
there's so many things where I'm looking at it going like, no one's really nailed it yet. And so if geofencing and like the Super Cruise works with, what are they called? They're called LiDAR maps. So they have these like vehicles that drive around that get really high resolution LiDAR data. So imagine if then your car is driving down it, you can have a really high accuracy sense of not just like where the lanes are, but like where the curb is, or, you know, if there happens to be a something that jets out, you know, a little median or something like that, it'll have all that detail. So you don't have to have LiDAR on the car. You can just have the map and it can rely on that. And then your car has all the other additional sensors in case something changed or whatever. So that's kind of the way.
I still think one of the biggest faults in any AI system is the lack of proper labeling. Like, I know I can hit the brakes or yank the steering wheel dangerously while going 75 mile an hour on the interstate to disengage and say, no, bad car, you weren't supposed to swerve that way, or you weren't supposed to slam on the brakes, while going 75. Like, I want a separate button that says naughty, you know, like bad car. You know, just that flags so that there's so many false positives that we don't have a good way to flag for. Again, without like tapping the brakes, which might not make sense if you're already, the brakes are being slammed on.
Yeah.
You know, the thing
wasn't
you do
there,
is grab
the accelerator.
Can you
hold the Tesla button or something and it'll say like bug report
thanks
or whatever?
For the feedback or something. Yeah, but like, yeah, you know, that's just
that really
the same as the close the elevator button. You know.
It doesn't do anything.
Does nothing. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
That is one of the challenges. I mean, and so when you think about machine learning, from the high level, there's the there's the two approaches, right? There's the supervised and the unsupervised. So what you're talking about is the supervised type of learning. But Tesla clearly has a huge advantage of this with over 1 million cars on the road of people that are using. Now, you know, Autopilot is not an autonomous driving system. It's a driver assist program. But I absolutely think that while you're in Autopilot, giving feedback like that would be super helpful for like before a full self-driving, not just the Tesla labeled version of it, but like actual level 3+. That I believe is going to be a whole rewrite of the system again. Right? Like every couple of years, these guys are going to have to be rewriting this whole thing. And so you may have like, oh, well, you don't have the full self-driving package, so you have a just the driver assist package or something, right? And so you actually don't even have the software there. But it's not to say that that software couldn't, you know, label the data and help teach the other ones and all that. So,
I have no doubt that it's a solvable thing, but I just really wish that we'd lean more into labeling. Like, even when you got, I still think when you got home, you could have like a separate Tesla app. You know, you sign up for this program, you go through training, you do like a 4-hour training of like how you're supposed to properly label things, and you review your drive. You know, while you're driving, you would hit a button, you know, that says like, I want to review this later. Mm. You know, and then you can look at the footage or something on your phone, and then like a little map, and it shows, you know, the map shows that the car did this, but you really wanted it to, then you draw where it should have gone or something.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
That's the type of stuff that would have been, that if you do, you know, these are loyal owners. You obviously would have to be an owner to sign up for it. You'd obviously have to have all these, you know, a minor like certification. And I just think that'd be the way to do it. But
well, and they could, you know, pay you in some way for doing that, like free supercharger miles or something like that, because clearly it's super valuable to them.
Yes.
Right. So I would say you could make it equitable.
You know, Tesla owners would love to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think people have, you know, and I can't tell you how many people have written me in a DM or something saying, hey, I keep going, you know, I go by this overpass and it was fine. And then the software update, you know, came in and I called the service center. And they told me, I don't know. And so who do I call? Can you call Elon and tell him about this overpass that I might drive to work? And I'm like, dude, you're not understanding how this works. Like,
right.
Because there is a sense of automatic labeling to some extent, right? But there's still a huge amount of challenges there. I mean, and then recently they talked about removing radar at all. That seems like a bad idea. Like, I don't understand that, like, so much of what Tesla does is driven around safety. That seems like making the cars less safe. Like, I don't see how you would say this increases safety. I could see how you would make an argument, this makes it more profitable if we don't have to have this extra part in here. But yeah, so I'm really, you know, I don't know. Like, I hope that we can get another autonomy day lined up or something, because I feel like it's been a while since there's been a lot of clarity around what's going on. And there's like this FSD beta thing. There's a button that people can download. I am scared as hell of all the potential tens, thousands of thousands of people downloading this and getting into accidents. You know, it's just like, I feel like, I don't know, we're in a bit of a place where we don't know the clear path forward. But I don't know, Ionic and Lyft and doing this, if they can figure it out, if they have, dude, that's awesome. I really hope that we see more of this. But, you know, we also don't need to have level 4 and 5 before we have level 3. Like, the kind of thing that's funny is that there seems to be this conversation online about, you know, that sucks because it's not level 5 or something. And you're like, who cares? If it saves lives, if it makes your job easier driving around, who cares? You know, cruise control itself, regular cruise control, is not any autonomous form of driving, but it still was really awesome when it first came out, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, like, we'll get there. And if we have to geofence our way into it or whatever, I think that's a totally fair approach. But I agree with you, Tim. If there were a way to provide more direct feedback to the models, the kind of deep learning networks that they use, then, you know, that would be helpful for sure.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, looking at things and seeing the world through cameras and things with
Joe
self-driving. God, this is the worst one I've ever done.
What are you doing?
Are you talking to me? I don't even know what you're queuing up here.
Where are you going?
Is it new?
A new view for what are you even talking about?
Sorry,
what am I looking at? Is this the Mark Watney version where they ripped the top off of the ship?
Basically, so forget the horrible attempt at a segue. SpaceX announced that the crew capsule, you know, look, see, it's the front of the vehicle and there's a camera, so you know, makes sense. My segue was perfect.
Tim. Look,
so
it's an autonomous vehicle.
The Dragon capsule, SpaceX's Crew Dragon capsule. Obviously, normally it docks to the International Space Station. That's what it's done so far. Every mission, you know, the two that have, well, the three that have gone up to space on orbit for, you know, DM-1, DM-2, and Crew-1 have all docked to the ISS. So it requires a docking adapter. And that normally is hid underneath the nose cone. There's this deployable nose cone shield that kind of opens up and you know, kind of hangs off there to the side. And then it, you know, allows the docking port to be exposed so that it can dock to the International Space Station. Cool. But what if you're not docking to the International Space Station, like the crew of Inspiration 4, which is just going to space for about 3 days? You don't need a docking port. So you could actually replace that with a giant, beautiful window, which is exactly what they're doing. So this go ahead.
No, I saw this picture and I was like, how is it going to dock with that thing? Like, do they remove it before they dock or something? But I didn't really. Okay, that explains it.
So for missions that do not dock to anything, just put a beautiful, huge 360-degree window up there. You know, this is probably, frankly, this is the same thing as almost the same thing as an EVA, like an extravehicular activity in some regards, because basically you're inside of a bubble for that anyway, and you're just wearing a very small spacesuit or a very small space spacecraft when you're inside of a spacesuit, right? This will give you a very similar feeling and a great view from the Dragon capsule, which I think is just awesome. This makes the Dragon capsule way cooler as a tourist mobile, because going up in 3 days inside a little tiny thing with just a couple, you know, relatively small airplane sized windows just really honestly didn't seem that appealing to me. And this instantly takes it from not that appealing to like, oh, that's actually really cool.
Is that what, like, was that the trigger that made you want to do it?
this isn't what they'll use for Dear Moon, but that's a little different. For that.
No, they'll fly on the thing that just exploded.
Yeah, that was the trigger.
Oh, that's
that made
right.
Me want to
it's
do it.
A Starship for Dear Moon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're personally invested in seeing this thing. It's not just content for you.
Yeah, I would definitely go start wanting to be in. You know, if I were selected for Dear Moon, I'd be like, all right, you're letting me into every meeting from this point on. I'm gonna make sure you guys are doing this stuff right. I'm gonna be playing Kerbal Space Program with my armchair knowledge and double check all of your engineering that I am not an engineer for. But no, this is different. You know, Crew Dragon obviously is extremely safe and reliable. They've had a great success with it. You know, NASA obviously was looking over their shoulder and providing expertise every step of the way. This makes Crew Dragon a lot more compelling space tourism mobile than it did. I'm almost surprised that they weren't advertising this before they already had someone that had purchased a completely private ride like this for Inspiration 4, because, you know, it makes it a lot cooler. Like, I would ever have $200 million to spend buying a ride in a Crew Dragon capsule, but, you know, if you're someone out there looking for space tourism, like, this is definitely something that's pretty cool now.
I wonder if that lid, the nose cone, is going to slide down at all, or if it's going to just be constant. Like, this guy's pointing his camera directly at it. He just wants like a shot of the inside. The nose cone.
Yeah, like, I think it'll unfortunately stay.
It's like all the rest of the universe around him, but he's looking at the back of that nose cone.
Right,
he's
exactly.
Like, check out the bolts of this
can't
nose
see
cone.
Anything.
I love this. Yeah. So it'll be almost a 360. It'll be like a 250-degree view or something.
It would
still
make sense.
Really, really cool.
It would make sense to position that so that blocked out the sun, so you weren't like blinded by
Ooh.
It, right? You know what I mean? And it kind of looks, you can see the way the light is reflecting.
And so it doesn't cook yet, too. Like, you're just sitting inside this glass bubble just getting cooked.
Yeah, I thought about that. Like, what about the radiation? You know, because that's a thing.
Yeah, but 3 days, no big deal, really. And so speaking of that specific mission, the Inspiration 4, which will be the first all-private citizen. Don't forget, there's Inspiration 4, and then there's the other one that I already forgot about that's going to the ISS. This one's free-flying, so this one will not dock to the ISS. There's another one that's a commercial one going to the ISS. But they announced the two more. The full crew has now been announced. So there's Chris Sembroski, who is representing the Generosity seat, an individual who has supported the St. Jude mission, finding cures, saving children. So yeah, Chris is the one. And then Dr. Cyan Proctor, who I'm familiar with from Yuri's Night, is an inspirational entrepreneur who has used the power of her Shift 4 shop to launch her dream business. So these are the two people that were chosen. So now all four seats, the founder here, Jared Isaacman, he's got everybody lined up, and Hope was the doctor that was chosen, physician assistant at St. Jude Children's Hospital.
Was this the one that Simone was trying to get on?
Yes. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. So there we go. This is a fun tweet from Eric Berger from Ars Technica saying, with the Inspiration 4 mission launching this fall, and now it seems likely that barring any kind of serious issues with Crew Dragon, it'll fly five astronaut missions before humans board Starliner. So Boeing Starliner. First Starliner crewed mission is likely net Q4 of this year. So, wow. Yeah.
Yay, government spending.
Wow. So, yep, there you go. Inspiration 4, welcome aboard, crew. And there's this live stream that I actually have not had time to watch yet, but it is with all members of the crew. So, we should probably definitely watch that at some point, because I'm excited to see what, you know, this is, unfortunately, I feel like we may have lost Joe for a second, but unfortunately, I feel like this mission has not really been hyped up as much as it should be, because this is four, like, totally everyday people that are going to space for real for 3 days, you know, like, not just suborbital. This is an orbital mission. I think this needs a lot more hype, but I don't get it. I don't get why
this
will
be the first
one of the
right?
biggest things. This will be the first commercial, you know, fully privatized commercial crew in history.
Right, because even when... Now, did the space shuttle successfully take up any civilians? I mean, I know the one that didn't make it, but were there any
as far
that,
as totally... Well, I mean, like...
Not totally. Like, I know you had to have a pilot still.
Yeah,
but,
oh, definitely. I mean,
did anybody ever...
people
yeah, did
that were
anybody
not trained,
ever fly on it?
Oh, yeah. Jeez. There was the new NASA administrator flew on it, who wasn't like a... you know, a trained astronaut, but they all had, you know, everyone that flew on the shuttle had a substantial amount of training. It wasn't just like this,
yeah,
you know, get on board here and have fun.
Make sure to show up 30 minutes prior to your flight, yeah, so you can check in at security and go through.
Exactly. It's always been a pretty substantial thing. This is going to be quite different. They'll still have training. They'll still have a decent amount of things that they have to do before they ever fly, but
physically, right? So you can know that you'll withstand it.
I'm guessing so. I don't know what all they'll go through. I don't think they'll do like the rigors of like, here's a center. Well, they did actually do a centrifuge. Never mind. They just did a centrifuge like less yesterday. But maybe they won't have to do like zero G vomit comet type of stuff. It's just like, hey, here's what it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm curious what their astronaut flight training experience will actually be.
Yeah. Wow. So. That's so cool. And nobody on board knows what they're doing.
Well, Isaac, I already forgot his. No, that's not true at all.
Oh, he's a pilot, right?
Jared Isaacman is like a record-breaking, like a phenomenal pilot.
Okay.
So he's definitely experienced with controlling a vehicle. So I think I have all faith in the world that he's going to be fully trained up just like any other astronaut
would
be.
That
would
make sense then. Yeah, because, I mean, things go wrong, right? You want some backups.
Yes.
Right.
You want people that know how to troubleshoot and do things without communications and things like that. So I believe that's going to be Jared. But also, if I remember right, one of them is actually, I think, I was corrected that it's not Cyan Proctor. It's Sean, it's pronounced Sean Proctor. But apparently, I think she was the one that's going to be the pilot for this, too. I don't quite remember. But yeah. So there you go.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, you guys want to take a break real quick?
Sure.
Let's do it. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. We wanted to take a second to thank all of our fans out there who are supporting this channel and our individual channels. We wouldn't be anything without you. Everyday Astronaut, Teslanomics, Answers with Joe. Thank you.
I mean, yeah. Honestly, it's this community of people. It's your comments, your likes, your shares, your subscriptions. I mean, we really wouldn't be doing any of this without you.
And we really love when you guys join the conversation. Why Don't They Just is super fun each week, where you submit your questions for us to try to answer as best we typically can.
We
wanted to let you know how to join the conversation via Patreon.
Yeah, if you are a Patreon member, you can join our exclusive Discord channel. You can also get early access to episodes, a lot of just other little small perks, but most importantly is our tight-knit community on Discord, because there's a lot of like-minded people that you can chat with live in real time, and it's just a lot of fun to see the community come together each week and listen to our recordings as we record it. That's my favorite part.
Yeah, and so anyway, if you want to join, you can go to olfpod.com/Patreon. We would love to see you there. Thanks again.
And now back to our ludicrous programming.
And we're back.
Yeah, we are. Right?
Joe.
Why
don't we just stumble into the Why Don't They Just segment of this episode?
Do it.
Ever since we started doing them after the break, I feel like there is no like good way to do it. Maybe we should try doing it before the break.
We should have like a jingle or something.
We Tim. Do have a jingle. Oh, yeah.
It's your
we
voice.
We have two jingles. We have Ben's Enya impression, and then we have my other one.
Someone hit me up the other day. They're like, I've been searching the whole internet. Where did you, who wrote the song for the OLF intro? I was like, Tim did. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, he has a whole album. Like, what? I'm like, yeah.
That's
what we're really waiting on. We're waiting on the follow-up album. Enough of this Starship talk. We're bored of that. Come on. Let's get some music in here.
I know. I'm sorry. Hey, my music was played on Rocket Lab's live stream last week.
Oh, that's right. That's
right. Copyright strike. Yes.
I'm going to sue them. No, I'm just kidding.
That would be
obviously
funny.
They did that with permission. Yeah, that'd be funny, though. All right, Joe, what do you got for us?
Talking about Starship earlier and some of the foibles and follies and missteps along the way, we have a couple of people who ask basically the same question. That question is, why don't they just make a rotating test stand that can put the engine and headers through a repeatable test regime without the need for flights? In other words, the whole swing to vertical thing that they'd had some issues with. And was that the problem in SN11? We don't know. I guess we'll see. But Brian 7399-64-59. Named after a galaxy, I believe, asked that, and so did Ben Pearson, Roadster Tracker, said, make a rotating test stand to test Starship landing to ensure bubbles and such aren't an issue. So I thought that was an interesting question, because if that's an issue that they keep having, then maybe that's something they can do without all the explodiness and fanfare and launching and getting FAA clearance and all that kind of stuff.
Well, let's start with Ben. What do you think?
Well, first off, because that is not nearly as fun. Yes. I mean, explosions are cool. Okay. We all love to see it. Second off, I mean, is what they're talking about like the jump zone version of this? They want to build like a foam pit park for, you know what I mean? We're like, oh, whatever. Just land into the foam pit. It's fine. Just get the crane to pull it out. Seems like that would be a massive undertaking. I don't know.
They're talking about literally imagine having like just two header tanks, you know, the two spherical header tanks, a Raptor engine underneath it. It's basically like a swing set, and you start it off horizontal, you light it up, and then you let it swing down, or, you know, you mechanically swing it down at the same rates that they'll see to make sure that there's not sloshing and stuff.
So
and
not
all stay
a
there
whole,
in place.
Not an, a whole Starship.
Right.
Just the bits.
Exactly.
I don't know. That seems like not as real world enough. I don't know. It could work, I guess, but it seems like maybe it might be easier just to keep making more of them. I guess it depends what's cheaper. That's where I would probably lean. Like, I was thinking about that earlier. You know, I know SpaceX is doing well financially, but each one of these isn't a trivial amount of money, right? Like they're still pretty expensive, especially if you like lose Raptor engines. That seems like a fair chunk of money that you're losing. So I don't know. If it saves them money, I would say that makes sense. If not, I don't know. It seems like it might not be worth it.
Joe, what do you think?
I yield my time to the gentleman from Dallas.
Well, so one of the first things that crossed my mind wasn't too far from the first thing that Ben said, which is, these launches, they get a lot of attention. I mean, I don't want to call it a purely marketing thing, but Elon's a hype man for sure. And a lot of what they do is based off of spectacular events, you know? Mm-hmm. So that might be one reason to keep doing it the way they're doing it. The other might be, I can imagine the expense and difficulty it would be in doing some kind of swivel technique thing with those, with those. I mean, these are powerful, powerful engines, like having to strap that down and swing it in such a way that it doesn't just come right off the hinges and cause all kinds of problems, I imagine would be challenging. So I like the idea, though. I mean, that's why I was kind of drawn to it. I thought it was an interesting discussion.
Right. I think I'm going to answer this in the way that, like, I think that's what a more traditional company would do. I think that's what NASA probably would do. That's probably what someone like Blue Origin or ULA would do, is they'd make a stand like that and figure it out on a stand, with the risk of course, blowing up your stand, blowing up, you know, still failing a lot on the stand. But I think the way SpaceX, the hardest thing to fathom here is that SpaceX is trying to solve two things simultaneously. They're trying to solve production of how do you build a rocket so quickly and cheaply that it doesn't matter when they blow up in the test regime, you know, in the test, periods, that it's literally like, this is scrap, but if it's scrap and we can learn something from it, fly it. You know what I mean? Like, that's almost the mantra. You have to think of these as like, not these fragile, careful with, that's my baby. Like, think of it as like, meh.
Starliner.
You have the opposite end of the spectrum, Starliner, and you have SLS that are like, oh, please, please don't blow up. Like, if this blows up, it's catastrophic. And this is like, it blew, another one blew up. Whoa, we got another one right there. You know, so it's like, they might as well fly it and learn by flying, period. And if they keep seeing issues during this flip maneuver, and if it's something they can't track down the root cause of, then maybe they'll have to build some kind of stand or something like that. But, someone's saying, Supermosh is saying, the test stand and something like that would probably cost about as much as 4 to 5 Starship prototypes, you know, or who really knows? That might be a little, you know, but there's a certain point of that is like, this test stand will get no data other than how to do this flipping part. Whereas a flight gets you a lot of extra data, a lot of practice doing things that matter.
They're probably refining the free fall and stuff along the way too.
Exactly.
Every single time they launch.
Oh yeah. And the ascent and the engine shut off and the gimbling and the avionics and the communication. I mean, everything is still fueling up the rocket still is a valuable lesson. Like every time they put fuel in the rocket, like that's a valuable lesson still. They're still refining and tweaking that. And they're obviously getting a lot closer, but it's still relatively new, you know? So they still get value every time they're doing anything like that. So I think that's my why don't they just answer. But I think that's a great, I get why they're.
The idea to me is so great because from my background in data, that's always been our approach. Like, I don't know, that looks like it'll work. Let's just try it 10,000 times and see what happens and refine along the way versus let's plan out every possible little tiny detail for years. But in some cases, you know, that's just how you have to do it. Like, think about like the first human flight to Mars. Like, you're gonna want to spend years calculating every possible little thing that could go wrong and how you're gonna want to do that, right? You can't just send people there willy-nilly and not care, you know, if things go wrong. So I think like there's a, you know, both approaches are valid. It's just a matter of like, can you afford to do it? You know, but clearly this is the more fun way and probably you get more data out of it, like you said, for even cheaper than trying to do it the more traditional approach. Yeah, I like that.
Yep. Well, speaking of doing it the more traditional approach, can I throw you guys one more, another spaceflight story quick?
That's it.
A nice quick one. Another shiny rocket appeared before our eyes on the same day that Starship flew. This is Virgin Galactic's Spaceship 3, so their third version of their spaceship that is going to be flying people for
suborbital space tourism. Is this a Batmobile? What is this? Look at this thing.
This looks cool to me. This is awesome. This is their third one. This is the VSS Imagine.
What?
So I think it's super cool. I think that looks really good. And of course, you know, just like all the spaceship prototypes like this, that's true. Arguably Spaceship 1 wasn't Virgin, it was Skilled Composites, but yes, this is Spaceship 3. This is kind of their fully refined ready-to-go vehicle, and it's going to be flying here by, I think they're going to be doing the first flights with it, I think, in May, they said.
Wow.
Or maybe next January. I don't remember. One of the two.
What are they pulling? They said with May. A Range Rover or something?
Yeah, they do, because they have like a partnership with Range Rover.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Yep. But I think this is really cool. I'm just glad to see that they're getting more hardware built. This is looking better for their space tourism. I still have been very leery, to be honest, that, like, you know, we're a long ways into this program and still have not flown any of the people that have paid $250,000 for a ride. I'm wanting to see more refined products come out, and this is looking like it's a step in the positive direction for me, where it's like, okay, cool, you are getting ready to actually fly this thing. So get your butts out there and do it, Virgin Galactic. We're all waiting and we're excited, and that thing looks awesome. And I want to say one more thing real quick. Sir Richard Branson said one of the reasons for making it shiny had nothing to do with like thermals. He's like, that way children on the ground can see the glint of the sun when it's in space. Like, I mean, that's cool. Like, otherwise you'd definitely lose track of it, you know? Mm-hmm. But if it is like glinting off the sun, it's pretty cool. But I don't, that's a very
give people specific, hope kind of a thing.
A specific reason. Like, oh, like, I don't think that would have been like one of my top priorities. Make it shiny so that you can maybe spot it from the ground a little easier, but that's cool.
Virgin's always had a penchant for the showmanship, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
He was the first Elon, you might say.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Spaceship 3, basically. There you go. It's happening. Joe, is that your puppy?
Is your puppy being attacked by Zoe right now?
You can't have your puppy making those adorable sounds without showing us.
So,
I love it.
Do we leave this in?
Yes.
It's there so is cute. Still some construction happening at my house, repairing some of the storm damage from January. So there's a bunch of guys downstairs. So we had to bring the puppy up here, and she was doing good, and now she's getting reckless.
Maybe she needs to be in your lap. You need to just be petting her.
Let me try. Hang on.
All right.
Oh, so should we go to another story while he's grabbing that?
So while he's talking about seeing
things. Generally,
you don't
want to reward that behavior, but if it'll make her calm down, then maybe we'll have to do it that way.
Is she there? Oh, yes.
Well, here, meanwhile, we already jumped into a story here, and the tiny puppy can
I'll catch up.
Can listen
in. So speaking of seeing things, the new...
This is like the third time we've tried seeing things as a segue, I think. Speaking of a camera and seeing it things.
And the people listening just to the audio are like, oh.
No, not again.
I don't see anything.
Mercedes-Benz, our favorite German automaker, has introduced the interior of their new EQS, which is their electric sedan that looks amazing. And part of it has a thing called a hyperscreen. It is a singular screen that spans the entire width of the car. This is like more screen than you probably need everywhere.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Go full screen on the photo there, Tim. You can see, I think if you click on view photos, you'll get a better sense of it, or maybe get under view gallery. You can kind of see it left and right and how it goes. So, you know, have the binnacle dash behind the steering wheel, right? Your speed and, you know, cruise control or whatever, those kind of things. And in the middle, you have this big entertainment one. And then off to the right, I don't really know what you have. Like, it looks like more controls or something like that. For
it looks to me, it's the exact same buttons that are literally 3 inches to the left.
Yeah.
The navigation, the EQ, the radio.
That's probably just a you know, prototype. I don't think they put much thought into that. Like, copy-paste.
That seems completely and wholly unnecessary for the passenger.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the passengers are going to have there, but and then if you go over a little bit more, you can see that they have some screens in the back, which is kind of nice, especially if you have children in the back, like I do on road trips. So that's kind of cool. It also does seem like it kind of is just kills the vibe of this like sleek, clean, beautiful thing. You know, just have like a screen, command stripped onto the back of a car, back of the seat. But I'm sure, you know, if you're riding in the back of it like an Uber or something like that, then, you know, that's cool. I could totally see the value in that. But what do you guys think of the interior overall?
So this is not a prototype. This is not a concept. This is the real thing.
Well, I think it's still renderings. Yeah, but this is like getting much, much closer to what will be real. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty cool, but it seems very concept-y to me. It seems like something that's not going to quite happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, what's this? Why does this one show two like different screens? I actually like this one better.
With the little screen popping up.
Yeah, this one, there's this one, like kind of that wood grain interior versus this. Like, that's a totally different interior. What's the...
Well, that's just a different design, and I still think it's the same screen. So I think you still have a screen
but it's just showing dots. Stands out, and it's like a more vertical tablet, more like the Ford, you know, Mach-E or whatever. And then this one's totally different. It has a little cubby underneath it and stuff.
I do like that one better.
I like this one way better. This one's awesome to me. I like that. If that came out, that'd be a hot option for me. But this one looks too, like they're trying too hard on screen stuff.
Now
I think that's a good way of putting it. That's how it felt for me when I say it seems concept-y. It seems like something aspirational that would never quite wind up on the road.
So this will be fully revealed in 2 weeks. So on April 15th is when the official reveal of this is. So
are there two options, like this option and this option, you know, because that's totally different.
That's an option, yeah. Yep.
The whole mega screen thing.
I like the LEDs on the side of the seats. Those are kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hyper screen is an option. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, if you go back to the hyper screen. I can't keep up with you there on the screen. But yeah, some of the other. I do think the other one is actually probably better. Like, I prefer that as well. Because I like that. You know, me, I'm a fan of my portrait mode displays right there. And I like that a lot. I don't necessarily like the binnacle dash sticking up so high and out like that. Like, it doesn't really, like, you don't really need that much information right behind the wheel, you know?
Right.
But I tend to agree. I think I like the one without the hyperscreen. So that must be the normal one, and then the hyperscreen is the full size screen.
Yeah. Give me that normal one.
We also got, I don't know if I put the link in there, but they also just reportedly updated the range on this to go 770 kilometers on a charge. So,
are you serious? No.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Uh-huh.
That's not an April Fool's joke?
I think it was revealed a couple days ago, yeah.
so 470, miles would be almost 700?
478 miles.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, on a single charge.
That's up there. How much is this thing going to cost? Is this like over 100 grand, I'm assuming?
I don't know if we know that yet. I haven't seen the official price. I would definitely put
it... This looks
like
a $150,000 car or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's Mercedes, first off. Second off, this is like a flagship vehicle. Like, this is like an S-Class. This isn't like a C-Class or whatever, you know. Which I always wondered about this. Like, what do you guys think at all it kind of cheapens the brand? Like, you know, I always remember being young, seeing a Mercedes, being like, holy crap, that thing. That, like, just seeing the brand of, like, wow, that is a high-end, luxury, expensive car. Like, you got to be rich to be driving one of those. But then when you look at it nowadays with the C-Class and other ones, you're like, okay, I mean, it's a nice car, you know. So, but it definitely kind of cheapens, because, like, the S-Class is a totally different vehicle, right? Like, it's way up there compared to the cheaper models. I always wondered if a brand, like, Porsche hasn't really done this, right? Like, I guess there's cheaper Porsches, but still, there's not like the, you know, $30,000 version.
It's not like an entry level.
Yeah, I mean, I think there technically are, but still, even the entry level one is still pretty pricey, kind of, they've held on to that thing. You know, like Tesla had that in the early days. It was like, if you, any Tesla, you're like, oh, damn, like, look at that. But now you're like, oh, here's another one, you know, whatever. It seems kind of commonplace.
I definitely know what you mean, but I think that gets foiled for me when you go to Germany and, like, you see BMW, Audi, and Mercedes as just totally normal cars.
Yeah.
Like, that luxury, I don't know how it became such a luxury item in the U.S., maybe just because at one point it was so scarce and they were so expensive and it was so, you know, something that it had this luxury appeal to it, but now it, you know, I don't know. They're the Chevys of Europe, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I would argue that a lot of the things are better done, but
right.
But yeah.
Well, the flip side of that is a while back when I worked at the paper, there was a friend of mine who did the auto reviews for, well, it wasn't editorial, it was still advertising and info, whatever. Anyway, she talked about the Volkswagen CC, which was like their step above the Passat, this like really high-end Volkswagen. It was a great car, but they eventually stopped making it and it kind of petered out because nobody wants to spend $50,000 or $60,000 on a Volkswagen.
Right.
You know, if you're going to spend that kind of money, you're going to go out to Mercedes or Audi or something like that.
Audi, yeah. Honda's the same way. Like, you can get a $40,000 Honda Accord, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But it's easily. Still a Honda Accord.
I think you can get above that. I think you can deck one out to, like, 45 or something. Like, just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? And so at some point, you're like, I'm just going to buy an Acura if I right. really, you know. Like
that's only in the United States because we're stupid enough to fall for that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's bizarre. But yeah, I kind of, so yeah, this car will be expensive. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It will not be a cheap car. But I do hope to get to drive one. You know, Mercedes, I have talked to them in the past about driving stuff. I have, it's always a funny position of like, I want to drive the real car. I don't want to drive the concept car.
Right.
Like the concept car is cool. And there are people, there's a whole niche there of that. But I want to like show people, you know, the real thing, not the... Mm. Oh, wow, look at that possibility, you know. So this I'm excited about for the actual unveiling and, you know, potential to drive it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Very futuristic. Yeah, awesome. Lots of robots involved in this car.
You know, I started to switch over to this and we were talking about auto driving earlier, but
we ruined your segue an hour and a half ago.
That's all right. it was pretty seamless. Not really.
Well, just like this.
Yeah. Okay. So Boston Dynamics, let's talk about them for a second. So usually when you think of Boston Dynamics, you picture something like this. This is their Atlas robot and they have all these videos where they're doing all these dancing and stuff. All right, here we go. Yeah. So he's dancing and then you got the Spot robots, the little dogs, and they're dancing with each other. So this is what Boston Dynamics is known for. They're known for like very agile, they kind of use these to learn about balance and to shift the weight around and stuff. Obviously, you know, SpaceX has a Spot robot to go and check out the tank farm when it's not safe and whatnot. So anyway, this is what they're kind of known for. Well, yesterday, I believe, or in the last couple of days, they introduced a new robot and it's called Stretch. It is not like the others. This is Stretch. It is a warehouse robot. So, what's interesting about Stretch is it's made to go into warehouses and function as an automation machine to automate the moving of boxes around the warehouse and stuff. But whereas the way they described it was that... today, you kind of have to build the warehouse around the automation system. This can go into the warehouse as it exists and simply take the place of a worker, basically.
Yay.
Jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they were saying it can move, 800 boxes in an hour? I think that was the number.
This is creeping
here they're just
me
kind
out.
Of showing off what it can do. It's got these suction cups on the end of it. It's got wheels, and it can roll around to wherever it needs to go. They were saying in the article that I'll pull up here in a second that one of the big challenges to fix was the balancing of it, because in the past they had to have a huge counterweight to be able to lift these boxes up and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they were able to, again, with some of the stuff they learned with Atlas and Spot and everything, they were able to, figure out how to get this to sort of counterbalance itself and like shift its weight on the floor and whatnot. But as you can see, it's got some little robot intelligence there, some visuals as it's picking out the boxes and knows how to put it on the thing. It's something I wanted to talk about because, yes, it's really cool and it's the future and all that, but there's real-world consequences to this.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I know we really don't want to talk politics, and I'm not going to make this political at all, but one of those things, this is one of those things that the a Democratic candidate, Andrew Yang, was preaching about his fear of automation quite a bit, and how it's, you know, it's dwindling jobs. And we've already seen that in, you know, the auto industry. You know, at one point Ford, I think the main Ford factory in Michigan, I don't remember the number, but it was something astronomical, like 250,000 people or something worked at this one factory or something stupid. I'll say, just to be safe, I don't remember, but I'll say 20,000 people. Now that number's 2,000, you know, it's gone down by like 10 times, just because it's so much automated, and there's no incentive for a company to not do that. And of course a company should do what's, you know, what's best for their company and make a profit and stuff. But there's real world consequences of when you make things more efficient and you start to remove physical labor, like those jobs don't just magically pop up somewhere else. They can just straight up disappear, you know? So it's like, what is the solution? You know, it's going to be a problem, and it's something we have to figure out.
So,
well, and when you started talking about that, you started by saying, I don't want this to be political. Well, it shouldn't be political.
Right.
You know,
it's people's jobs.
This is just, it's reality, and this is going to be going more and more that direction. And we need to figure out how to adjust for that, you know?
Thankfully there is something here. So, and this happened back from, miners, essentially coal miners and stuff is where it started, where there's a federal program for, I think it's called displaced workers. And what it is essentially is when a technology comes along that, you know, automates your job, or even, I mean, globalization is the killer, the real like killer of a lot of jobs, because like I was listening to a thing about packing tuna into cans, and they'll like catch it out here in California and ship it to Thailand and then bring it back. Because it is just far cheaper to do that than just to have a person here do it. But there is a federal program that out there for people that have these kind of disruptions. So if you were somebody whose job was essentially displaced by a new technology like this or something like globalization, there are programs where you can apply to get money just to pay your bills and stuff, as well as things like training for a new job. Yeah, it is a challenge. I do wonder, though, because I feel like this argument or this, like are we, is it going to be this time different than it has been in the past? You know, because a lot of things, like people that shoot horses, right? When the car came around, bam, your job's gone, right? What do you do? So it's not like this is a new challenge for us, but I wonder if the pace of which, it's coming at us is too quick or whatever to cause, you know, to like if we're too slow to adapt, essentially.
Well, and something else to point out, somebody mentioned this earlier in Discord, was that there's also AIs that can do things like take the place of paralegals for like producing basic legal documents and checking them for errors and stuff like that at the level or better than a human can do. There's a lot of people in more, I guess you could call them white collar jobs that, or desk jobs that are kind of like, yeah, well, I don't work in a warehouse. I'm not an Uber driver, so that's not going to affect me. It's going to affect you. It's going to affect everybody at some point along the way, even us, you know, as content creators.
Well, little Michaela, right? Little Michaela is an influencer that's completely digitally generated. Right. And has like sponsors and stuff, you know, 3 million Instagram followers or whatever.
It's just one of those, it's an ongoing thing. It's not the sudden, like today we have to solve this. It's like, we'll have to continually figure out what's fair and equal going forward. You know, like we have to plan around, okay, like, you know, some of the arguments are like, okay, well, if you, you know, if robots replace people, then, you know, there's new jobs in robot repair, and there's new jobs and, you know, people are making money selling the robots and selling the software and blah, blah, blah. But of course, like if there's only 10 people in a company that are outputting 1,000 robots and displace 1,000 jobs, you know, they're, and those are high end technical jobs. There's unfortunately, especially when an education system isn't incentivized to go seek further education, you know, when people can't afford to go into $50,000 in debt to get a degree so they can learn how to code or something like that. And we still have a system that's kind of set up that, like, if you want to get a job as an engineer, you probably have to go to college still, you know. It's like, there's all these things that are like, how do we, what's the right thing to kind of focus on first, you know? I don't have those answers, yeah. But I don't think anyone does, but it's obviously one of those ongoing discussions that we have to be paying attention to.
Yeah, I know there's a whole competition to come up with a hand robot, a robot that has a hand-like structure, because a lot of the Amazon factories and stuff in particular, you have to reach into this thing and grab a thing, and that is incredibly difficult for a robot to do with the amount like even close to the amount of precision as we have in our human hand. So I know that, you know, it's like, oh, great, we're supporting robotics and STEM so we can displace thousands of jobs and make Jeff Bezos richer, right? Yeah. Like in the end, you know, that's what right. It comes down to. So what's the right answer? What? It's some form of social programs to help people, or because you can't fault a company. I mean, because even regardless of robots, right? Like I'm saying, you want to put tuna in a can, you do it in Thailand because it is just far cheaper than it is here. There's no robots involved in this, you know?
Right.
So what's the right answer? Yeah, and how do you balance quality of life and providing dignity, you know, because I really look at that. Who said that? It's like, you know, all work is dignified. And I remember not understanding that when I was younger, but I completely understand it now. You know, whether or not you, I don't know, make content for a living or you push a broom for a living, there is something dignified about I am contributing to something, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there, and if you no longer have that, then I think psychologically and then more broadly societally, you can have issues. I mean, COVID is a big, you know, if you see the amount of crime and things that are happening now, it's like people not only are starving and have to resort to, you know, other means to obtain their basic needs for living. There's also just a sense of like, well, I don't have a job. What's my purpose here? What am I doing?
Yeah, that can be a real concern for sure. Oh, it's one of those things like our ludicrous future is full of wonder and things, but there's so many implications to some of these things that, again, like it is funny though how some things turn 360, or like not 180, 360, because I know people misuse that sometimes. Where like horses, you know, were once like, well, and I guess no, this would be a 180, because horses went from like, at one point you were the poor person if you're still riding a horse when your neighbors were getting cars. But now it's kind of 180 degrees from that. Like typically if you own horses, like you're fairly wealthy because it's like a, you know, it's like a luxury item to be able to have horses, you know? And I wonder how many of those technologies will kind of become something like that. You know, I think we're getting back into like the analog stuff and things that are more, we're finding value and tangible value in things that are handmade because of its scarcity and its rarity these days and in hand trade. So I wonder if there's going to be like a balance where some of these old trades that, you know, people have like, oh, I can still produce a transistor radio using, you know, tubes and I can build it myself. And yeah, it sounds worse. And yeah, it's super expensive, but people are going to value that more. So those trades might go back, you know, there might be some kind of thing like that where it's like,
I thought about that for retail, how like Amazon killed retail, right? But not really. Because how many neighborhoods and towns have these cute little downtown areas or whatever, and you go down there and all it is boutiques with local made stuff. You know, Amazon killed retail for an iPhone or something, right?
Right.
Like it killed the retail,
the electronics or like
the things that were not special at all about retail, right? The things that were, I just need to buy this. I need cat food. You know, I don't care about what store I get my cat food from, right?
Right,
but,
right.
But when I want to go buy clothes or any of these, yeah, like I think, I think there is a sense, there is a part of retail that will never die because it is the special part that is like not replaceable by these automation systems, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, that was a deep dive there into our concerns of automation. Thanks, Joe.
Well, but that's why I wanted to talk about it. It's technology that when you first see it, it's like, oh, that's amazing. And it's getting us closer to the Jetsons and Star Trek and everything, which we all want, that sort of utopian thing. But in the Jetsons and Star Trek, they don't talk about like how do people make money? You know, like how do they provide for themselves? Like there's an economic model that would require a total, you know, shakeup of society. And are we ready for that? And could we even make that happen? You know, there's a lot of questions involved there.
This goes into some of the other things too, like nuclear fusion, right? Is one of these where if we figure this out and we can replicate it, then what happens to the entire energy sector, right? When literally we can have like unlimited clean power for everyone for practically free. What happens to all the oil? Like I'm very much, you know, there have been countless examples of where a company sees something like that as a threat and says, cool, let's just throw a wrench in this entire plan to delay it so we can keep alive. I mean, electric cars, actually, great example, right? Mm-hmm. GM killing the EV1 because it was too good. You know, there's all kinds of examples of these kind of things. So I don't think any of these things are going to disrupt as quickly and as quietly. I don't think like this robot is going to be like, cool, tomorrow, boom, we're just going to fire 80,000 people. Like unions will lose their mind. They'll set the building on fire. Like it's going to be chaos. It's going to be messy as we trot into this, you know? And other companies and things I think are going to try to stifle technology and innovation for the sake of their own livelihood.
Hmm. Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
May we live in interesting times.
Yes, we do. Speaking of that, what are you guys working on?
I'll go first quick because you guys know I'm gonna I'm hopefully getting near the end of plugging things in professionally. Gaffman.com. I'm almost done being grip boy or whatever. Like I'm almost done with it, and I'm excited because I'm finally gonna get back into making videos for a living, which would be fantastic. Honestly,
plug the big poll you put on Twitter.
Yeah, I did a poll on Twitter. It was kind of a channel checkup thing after all of this. I'm just really trying to make sure. I feel like I've lost it completely. Like, I feel like I've put way too much into this now, like financially and emotionally and physically to the point where I'm just like reevaluating every, like, do people even care? Like, do they even want high quality footage of this stuff live? Or am I just, you know, like, can I just do it from a cell phone? You know what I mean? Like, I'm having a bit of that, a bit of buyer's remorse for dropping the value of two nice cars into a studio space, you know, like it's, what's the point kind of? So I'm really excited to take a break from it. I'm really excited when I get my car back to drive home and have some quiet time. And that's always really healthy for me just to like use those 2 days on the road as like, you know, regurgitation and let the gears turn a little bit.
Self-reflection a little bit.
Exactly. Some windshield therapy, I call it. Yeah. But the one thing that I am going to say is I think I'm going to actually reshoot the belly flop video for the third time now because the background changed again. And there's already things I want to voice over for my last shoot and like redo. And I reshot it, looked at the footage just the other day, realized it's like, it's near focused on the microphone, almost like the entire video. So I was like, oh my God, it only takes me about 3 hours to shoot a video like that. So no big deal. But I'm gonna get back to that as soon as I possibly can. Like today and tomorrow are still kind of cleanup days. By the weekend, we're gonna do a Patreon a Patreon stream, so I can finally do a studio tour once now that it'll be cleaned up. And then video time, my friends, and then hopefully get back home soon. Yeah. Nice. What about you guys? Cool. What about you, Ben?
What do I have going on? I don't even know, man. Oh, next week is the water panel video.
Cool.
The 1 year Jenny was like, no, you need to reshoot all this. And I'm like, I'm not pulling a Tim Dodd. It's good enough, you know? So I've got that video. I need to finish editing it, but, I was in Arizona for 5 days, so have been kind of out of pocket, but, looking at that. And then the Mercedes is coming out. I've got a bunch of other stuff, lined up, but that's immediate future. Joe?
I haven't really made this announcement really, but
you're moving to California.
No. all the movement's going the other direction from there to here.
The plan, housing is cheap. Trust me. Just come on out.
I don't have a video coming out on Monday. Not a regular one anyway. For the first time in 6 years.
No way.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm kind of taking April off a little bit.
Sweet. Do yeah, it, Joe.
Can I do it too?
Well, when I say take April off, I mean off from posting weekly videos and being on that sort of deadline all the time.
Yes.
I have a lot of behind the scenes stuff I need to work on, and a lot of, I don't know, kind of repositioning myself now that the channel's reached, you know, the whole million mark, and we're kind of time to put the big boy pants on, I guess. But just going to take a little time to work out what direction I want to take things from here going forward, and pick things back up in May. But I say it's time off, but I'm going to have to really struggle to actually take some days to rest and relax, which is also part of it. I need it. I've got some health stuff that I'm dealing with right now and trying to work
on.
Can
I come out there and take this time off with you? And we just walk around a lake and
do it.
Complain about making videos or something.
Yeah.
Can I join?
You need to be vaccinated first, Tim. Sorry.
I'm working on it.
Is it open, by the way? Can you just anybody in Texas register?
I think starting on the 30th, the 31st, it was all adults. So I guess
above
over
16.
18. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been checking it. I still couldn't get anything because I'm debating if I want to do it here or in Iowa, because wherever it is, I'll have to be in that same place in about 3 weeks. And that's really hard for me to know where and
unless
what.
Can you get a Johnson & Johnson one?
I don't think you can request like a certain one, because that'd be great if I could just be like, yeah, give me one shot, please.
The CVS out here in California, all the ones they were doing that a bunch of my friends got were just one shot, and I was jealous of that.
Yeah, I don't think there's a good way to know exactly, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'll be fun once it is. I mean, that's one of those, I'm hilariously looking forward to that moment in life when I'm like, after, you know, the time set and everything is good, like not necessarily so that I can like, I don't think, boom, life's going to go back to normal. But like, I've got a lot of friends that are vaccinated that I would just love to have people over and not think about it. Because it is, you know, if it's a small group of people that are all vaccinated, the CDC is saying that it is okay to have like social gatherings like that, you know, and that I want to have a grill out. I want to, you know, have people over, watch a movie or you know, do that, those types of social settings.
Mud wrestling, whatever.
Yep. Of course, that's what I always do for fun. So,
dang.
Yeah.
Well, congrats, Joe. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Man. I really am.
No, that'll be good. Don't feel bad about it. I know you're probably going to have some guilt.
Totally. I already do. And I'm like, every day it's like, well, you know, I could take this time to redo the set. Yeah, I could do that. And I could work on this other thing. And I've got that Nebula series. I could get caught up on I could get ahead on scripts. I could get a whole lot of scripts done. And suddenly I'm like, okay, I'm filling up all my time with work, right. You know? And so it's the hardest thing about it is going to be just making myself not do stuff for at least a few days. Just,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yep.
I understand.
It'll be good.
Well, Godspeed to you. And we'll see you guys in
our ludicrous future.
Turn it off.
Hey guys, thanks so much for watching and for listening. We really do appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you.
Yeah, and if you want more of us, you can consider becoming a Patreon member, where you can get early access to episodes, you can listen to us record live, join our awesome Discord community, or get your name in the show credits.
So head over to olfpod.com/Patreon to learn more. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.